and come live in Calgary. And you can do that anytime. That was a nice addition to our worship this morning. There are several friends in my life that have been very influential throughout the years. There's too many to name, so if any of my friends are listening this morning and I leave out, please don't be offended. But my closest friend growing up was a curly, blonde-haired guy named Ian Pearden. He actually grew up in Michigan, just across the road from where Lisa grew up, and his dad was hired to be an aviation teacher, a mission aviation teacher, a wonderful mechanic on little planes. And so they moved to Greenville when Ian was 5, and we ended up on the same soccer team, and some of my fondest memories from my childhood were spent with Ian. Probably some of my worst memories were spent with Ian as well, because we did a few dumb things together. A few might be an understatement, as my mom would attest, but some of my best memories were spent with Ian, and he was an iron sharpening iron kind of friend. He loved the Lord, probably has the gift of evangelism, as I can assess his gifts, and we had a lot of great times together on the ball fields and riding bikes and playing in the woods and talking about the Lord together and witnessing together. And he was very instrumental in shaping my character in my elementary and high school and college years in particular. In college, right before college, at the Wilds Christian Camp in our CIT training, I ended up on the bleachers there for camp pictures that week. And just providentially, I ended up either beside or behind. He's a few inches taller than I am. I ended up beside a guy named Adam Bailey. And I had met Adam one time before, and it wasn't a particularly pleasant experience. He was down at school for something, and we were at the gym one night in the summer, and we were playing, and we ended up on opposite teams in 3-on-3, and we went at it pretty good. And then we end up on the bleachers for a picture there at the Wilds, and it was a friendship that immediately I just took off, and used him, as I'll share later, to continue to shape my character in college and even at times rebuke me when I needed rebuke. Lord brought other friends in college, Charles Hyers, the Inufuku cousins from the islands of Hawaii, really friends from all over the world, and then probably the most significant in my life other than my conversion, the first date I had over a hamburger at the school snack shop. God brings friends into our lives at the right times when we need it. Sometimes we don't always feel it. They see this morning from the book of Proverbs that we need what a friend has to offer. Last week we looked at the negative side. Today we'll look at the positive side, so I hope it'll be uplifting. I hope last week as well. We had to give some warnings, but this morning we're going to look at the positive side of friendship here from Proverbs, answering two simple questions. The first question is, what kind of friends should you be looking for? Or what kind of friends should you have as you evaluate the friends that you already have? Then the second question, what kind of friend should you be? And that's really what I want to focus on this morning. What kind of friend should I be? As I want to continue to develop godly friendships and become a godly friend, what kind of friend should I be according to God? So Proverbs chapter 27 contains the most famous verse in the entire Bible on friendship and its benefits. Proverbs chapter 27. Proverbs 27 and verse 17. Iron sharpens iron. So one man sharpens the face or countenance of his friend. Iron sharpens iron. So one man, one person, sharpens the face of his friends. Obviously, this applies to female friendships. He's just using a generic word here. One person sharpens the face of their friend. This is exactly what we saw last week in Proverbs 13 and verse 20, isn't it? He who walks with wise people will become wise, but a companion of fools will suffer harm. Solomon is repeatedly reminding us here in Proverbs that friends will shape not only your character, who you are, but they will also shape your destiny, where you end up. Friendship is so significant that it could play a part in where you spend eternity. So he says, iron sharpens iron. Just like when you go out on a camping trip, guys, kids, ladies, whoever likes to camp, and you need to sharpen your knife, what do? You pull out something that's hard, a stone, something that you can rub against that knife, and we would think, well, it would just dull it, it would ruin it, but actually that's what you need to make a knife sharp. God is saying, if you're going to grow spiritually, one of the most effective ways to grow is to have friends that, like iron on iron, like a knife on a sharpening stone, a whetting stone, that friend will sharpen your character, is what he's saying. Can actually have an influence on what your character is like and where you end up eternally. So, of course, the application is, if friends have that kind of influence, we need to choose very wisely. So let's evaluate, first of all, answer the question, what kind of friends should I have? And as we go through this, you can start thinking about, am I this kind of friend? But I also want you to be asking yourself, are these the kinds of friends I have? Let's go back to, well, we'll stay here in Proverbs 27. Proverbs 27 says more about friendship than any other passage in the book of Proverbs. What kind of friends should you choose from yourself? What kind of friends should you have? Remember last week, we looked at the characteristics of the fool because Solomon is warning his son, stay away from the fool and the scoffer. You don't want to be like that. You don't want to marry one. You don't want to have them as your close friends. What was the characteristics? What were the characteristics of the fool? Remember, first of all, they didn't fear God because they were intentionally ignorant of biblical truth. This isn't somebody that just never had opportunity to hear the gospel. This is somebody who's intentionally ignorant of biblical truth, though we could say generally that unbelievers are fools, because what could be more foolish than rejecting the greatest gift ever offered? But fools are intentionally ignorant of biblical truth. They don't fear God. They don't love God. And secondly, they play with sin like a game. It's sport to them. Sinning is fun. Third, they use ungodly speech. Their tongue spouts out folly. They stir up fights and strife. They have perverse speech. They swear. They gossip. They spread slander. Fourthly, a fool lacks self-control, whether it be with alcohol, with food, or with their temper, with their money. They lack self-control. And finally, we saw that a fool is proud. They're not teachable. We'll see some of those same, the opposite characteristics under a wise person. What is a wise person? Basically, to sum it up, you want to be friends with wise people. So what is a wise person? Well, just the opposite of a fool. Chapter 3, verse 7 tells us that a wise person fears and knows God. Fearing God is kind of another way of just saying they love God with all their heart, soul, and mind. That's really what it means to fear God. Secondly, a wise person pursues biblical truth. Chapter 18, verse 15 tells us that they seek after knowledge. They don't just wait for knowledge to come to them. They pursue it. Those of you that are still in school have probably figured out that if you want to do well in school, you've got to get active in your pursuit of knowledge. Third characteristic of a wise person is that they turn away from evil. They see evil on the horizon and they don't think, oh, I wonder what it's like. Maybe I should test it just to make sure it's bad. They see it on the horizon and they turn away from it, but the naive go forward and they're punished. Fourth characteristic of a wise person, in contrast to the fool who's proud, a wise person is humbly teachable. You see that again and again and again in Proverbs. They listen to their parents. They listen to the king. They listen to any God-given authority. They listen to wise counsel from friends. They're humbly teachable. Fifth characteristic of a wise person is that they control their tongue. They control their tongue and their temper. It says in Proverbs 29, verse 11, a fool always loses a temper, but a wise man holds it back. So a wise person controls his tongue and uses his tongue for what's right. And that leads us to Proverbs 27 and verse 5. Proverbs 27 and verse 5. Solomon writes, "Better is open rebuke than love that is concealed or hidden." It's better to be rebuked out in public, openly, than to have someone who says they love you, but they hide it. They conceal that love. Someone could say that they love you, but that doesn't mean they're willing to do what's good for you. Sometimes a rebuke is exactly what your friend needs and what you need. But I know the objections. It's hard. No one likes to hear a rebuke. I've tried this before and they got mad at me. What if I lose the friendship? If you have the right friends, they're humble and teachable. And they may not agree with your assessment because your assessment may not be right, but they'll give you a fair hearing because they're humble and they're teachable. But if you have fools for friends, they're not going to listen. They're not going to listen. Look at verse 6. He says, "Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful or possibly many are the kisses of an enemy." Faithful are the wounds of a friend. I didn't realize this as I was studying this out this week, but this word for Hebrew for friend, this word in Hebrew for friend, actually comes from the same word that means to love. And that was a big eye-opener to me. They love you and you love them. Or as the New Testament might say, beloved or dearly loved one. That's what a friend is. We've all been wounded by false friends, haven't we? Someone that we thought had our back, and in fact, they stabbed us in the back when we weren't looking. We've all been wounded by false friends, but that's not what Solomon is talking about here in verse 6, is it? He's not talking about the wounds of a false friend. He's talking about the wounds of somebody who really loves you. This is a true friend who wounds you. So what are these wounds? Well, in the context of verse 5, what do these wounds have to be? A rebuke, confrontation, correction. And we tend to think that a good friendship is one that there's no confrontation at all. Everything's just always harmonious and smooth as anything. And Solomon says exactly the opposite. A healthy friendship is one that, when necessary, occasionally, not every day, but occasionally needs confrontation, or as Paul puts it in Ephesians 4:15, somebody who's willing to speak the truth in love to you. Probably those of you that work for an incorrigible boss, a frustrating, stubborn, harsh boss, you wish that one of the vice presidents would have the courage to speak the truth in love. You say, "I'm not going to do it because I don't want to get fired." But I wish somebody in the company would have the guts to speak the truth in love. That's a sign of a true friend. He says, "Faithful are the wounds of his friend." You start wandering away from the Lord and they speak the truth in love to you. That's the kind of friend you want. You don't want a bunch of yes men or yes women as friends. You want friends who are willing to tell you hard things. They say, "Think what you're doing. Don't go that way. Don't go the path of a fool. Are you sure you should be watching this? Are you sure you should be listening to this? We missed you on Sunday. Where were you? Everything okay? I noticed you missed several weeks in a row. That's going to destroy your life spiritually." Somebody who's willing to speak the truth in love. Now, we all know that when you can tell that somebody doesn't like you, even if they're a part of your church, and they criticize you, you don't put a lot of stock in it, do you? No, you don't, because you know they don't care about you. But when somebody that you know loves you, and a true friend who's been there through thick and thin before, says something hard to you, you need to listen. That's the kind of friend that you want. Doesn't mean they're always right, but often they are. The rebuke of a wise friend, he says here, is what in verse 6? He describes it as faithful. That's what the text says, right? Faithful, trustworthy, reliable. How is the rebuke of a friend reliable? Why? For two reasons. First, because they love me. And so they're going to try and give me what's good for me. That's what love is. It's devotion to somebody to where I want to give them what's good for them, not what's bad for them. And when a rebuke is good for them, I need to give them that rebuke. And second, it's reliable because they're wise. Because I've chosen wise friends, hopefully by God's grace. And so what they tell me is going to be biblical wisdom much of the time. But look at the contrast, verse 6. Deceitful This word could either be translated deceitful or many, a multitude are the kisses. Probably multitude is the right idea. Many are the kisses of an enemy. I mean they won't stop. They won't stop kissing him, but there's no true love there. So what does a wise friend do? Uses his tongue or her tongue to correct you when necessary. Are those the kinds of friends you have? They also use their tongues to give you a godly advice. Look at verse 9 of the same chapter. Verse 9 of chapter 27, Solomon writes, "Oil and perfume make the heart glad." So a man's counsel is sweet to a friend. Or maybe the idea is the sweetness of your friend is the counsel that comes from his soul. That's what makes friendship so sweet. Oil here, olive oil, of course, was used for a ton of things in Bible times. One of the best commodities. But it became a picture of prosperity in Israel. You often find passages where it talks about the oil, the wine, the wheat. That's a picture of prosperity from God's hand. So he's saying here, as God prospers you, you put oil on, you have this joy. This oil was used often in lotion or perfume. He says, oil and perfume make the heart glad. You get dressed up to go to the symphony, you put your best clothes on, you put perfume on, you get all dressed up. And there's just something fun about that once in a while, isn't there? And somebody say, no, just give me overalls all the time. Okay, I'm sorry if you can't relate to verse 9. But once in a while, it's nice to enjoy just the nice things of life that God has given us. What's the point? What's the point of the comparison? Just like those things bring joy to the heart, to get wise counsel from a friend should also bring great joy to your heart. The idea here is sincere, passionate advice. Counsel about what to study in school, who you should marry, child rearing, spiritual counsel. Do your friends give you that? Mine did. Sometimes I didn't like it. One piece of advice that I did like, as I've told you before, was my friend Adam in college was dating one of Lisa's friends. So they started working behind the scenes with one of our other friends, Deneen Lawson, and they started conniving and planning and scheming. I know those are nefarious sounding words, but it was good kind of scheming. So one day we were at lunch. I remember distinctly, I can picture where we were in the dining common. I'm on the north side of the table, he's on the south side, and he says, out of the blue, he says, "Michael, I know who I want you to marry." Okay. All right, I'm open to counsel. I'm not having much success so far, and so he says, "Lisa Monroe." Okay, all right. So we talked about it a little bit, and I started praying about it. And over those three weeks, you know what God did? He gave me an intense desire to ask Lisa out. So what did I do? I asked her out. And what happened? Well, the rest is history, as they say. But what was it? It was wise counsel from a friend. I mean, here I am at a school with thousands of Christian girls. And I haven't yet been brought across the path. I mean, we knew each other, but I'd never thought of, well, that was stupid. Maybe I should ask her out. The wise counsel of a friend can help you to see things you don't see, even in practical areas of life. A good friend gives good advice, so give it a fair hearing. So what kind of friend should you choose for yourself? A wise friend. Let me ask you, do your friends have self-control with alcohol, with money, with their temper, with food? Do your friends have self-control? Are your friends willing to tell you the hard thing because they know God's Word, because they're pursuing knowledge in God's Word, they're pursuing biblical truth, because they fear and love God? If you cannot honestly say from the depths of your heart, "That's the kind of friends I have," then you need new friends. You say, "Well, that's hard to do. How do you do that?" I can give you some advice after the service, because I had to come to a place in my life where I needed new friends. But your closest friends should be those that are wise. Second question, what kind of friend should you be? What kind of friend should you be? Look down at verse 10. See, I never knew there was so much about friendship in one chapter of Proverbs. Yeah, chapter 27 is just loaded. Verse 10. Do not forsake your own friend or your father's friend. Do not go to your brother's house in the day of your calamity. Better is a neighbor who is near than a brother who is far away. He says, do not forsake your friend or your father's friends. So he raises the stakes a little bit. He says, don't forsake your friend or your father's friend. What is he teaching us about friendship? That if I'm going to be a good friend, friendship is a commitment. Friendship is a commitment. I'm not talking about a marriage commitment. I'm not talking about a marriage covenant, though that is probably the greatest form of friendship. Friendship is commitment. It involves responsibility, and that's why sometimes friendships are hard. Because God expects me to give something. Here He expects me to show loyalty to my godly friends and my parents' godly friends. Now, if they're living in persistent disobedience as a professing Christian, you will have to distance yourself from the friendship. That's not what God is prohibiting here. Here He is prohibiting a disloyalty that evidences a lack of love. When you have a believing friend who's walking in persistent disobedience and they've been taken through the process of Matthew 18 of church discipline there, then the best thing you can do for them is to separate from them, according to Scripture. Friendship is knowing what to do at the right time for the good of your friend. And sometimes that does involve distancing yourself when they're walking in persistent disobedience. But here he's just talking about a friend that maybe was rich at one point and now they've lost their wealth and so you're tempted to turn the back on them. Or maybe this friend has said something about you that you don't like and you're tempted to turn your back on them or distance yourself from them. He says, do not forsake your friend or your father's friend. It's easy to want a friendship with somebody who's well-liked and succeeding, but when they're a little bit more down and out, then the rubber meets the road. Notice what he says there in verse 10. He says, do not go to your brother's house in the day of calamity. So disaster strikes in your life. You get terrible news. And you think, man, my brother's house would be a wonderful place to go get help and advice. But he says, there are times where you're not going to do that. Why not? The end of the verse says, better is a neighbor who is near than a brother who's far away. So you've got a neighbor who's also a friend. And he lives right next to you or three houses down or across the city and your brother and your sister are in Nova Scotia. I just thought of that randomly, Dorothy. Sorry. This is not direct application for Dorothy right now. I just thought of that randomly. You got a brother or sister that lives thousands of kilometers away or even hundreds of kilometers away. And before the advent of Facebook and FaceTime and everything else and telephones, what are you going to do? Are you going to get on your camel? Go across the desert? I mean, your problems will all be over by then because you'll be in eternity by the time that you get there. But he says, by the time you get there, they can't help you with your problems. You need somebody who's close by. And so he says, don't seek out somebody who's thousands of miles away when you've got somebody right here. There's a really difficult balance to find in the Christian life between your biological family and your church family. And I often see people err on either sides. In general, in our circles, I would see people neglect their church family for their biological family. And they create this distinction like, well, I can either spend time with my family this Sunday or I can spend time with my church family. And they create this false dichotomy and often will neglect the church family for their biological family. You've got to think through those things. But this verse, I think, would speak to that, that it's better to have a friend who's close by than even family who's far away. So first characteristic of a friend that you want to be and ought to be, if you're a child of God, the first thing you should be for your friends is faithful. Is faithful and loyal. That doesn't mean defend their sin. It means love them. Do what's good for him. Be a faithful friend. That's the kind of friend you and I must be. Second, in verse 14, He writes, "He who blesses his friend with a loud voice early in the morning, it will be reckoned a curse to him." Anybody who says the Bible's a boring book hasn't read the Proverbs before. This is hilarious. Isn't this so true? Hasn't this happened to you before? You're laying down in bed, you're just exhausted after a long day, things are piling up at work, and you take your shower and you crawl into bed and you're just drifting off to sleep, and all of a sudden your phone rings. Should I answer it? Something could be wrong, so you pick it up. Hi, how you doing? What's going on? Oh, I just wanted to call and... You wanted to call and chat now? Are you kidding me? This happens, or early in the morning. I mean, we can picture it here in Israel. A guy shows up and raps on his friend's door. "Hi, friend, it's a beautiful day to serve the Lord." "I'm sure it is, but you might not live to see it." "Hope it's a great one for you. I mean, did I ask you for a wake-up call?" It's so apt here. Calling before they get up in the morning, calling when they're going to bed, or taking forever to talk about something when they have other things they need to be doing, or in your friendship, just making it focused on yourself, constantly talking about yourself instead of asking questions, listening. Friends, godly friendships require give and take. They can't be one-sided. Self-focused friends may be sincere, but I think maybe one of the things that Solomon is saying is they can get annoying. They're naive and they need to grow into wisdom. You don't reject them because they're naive. You try and help them to grow into wisdom. That might be what Solomon's driving at here. But I think really what the point Solomon is making here is not that this is just a naive person who needs more wisdom. This is a person with ulterior motives. This is not a sincere friend. I mean, if they were a genuine friend, they probably would be thinking about your needs at this point, not trying to butter you up for something. "God bless you, friend. How was your day?" This is a friend that you need to avoid because they're not a true friend. Look at the end of the verse. It says, "It will be reckoned a curse." It will be reckoned to the friend as a curse. He says, if you do this to your friend's going to think this is a curse. Why? Because he's going to recognize that your motives probably aren't sincere. This is a false friend trying to manipulate you, butter you up. And so you should take it as a curse, not a blessing. You don't want that kind of friendship. And friends, you are my friends, and I'm thankful for that. Don't be so desperate to have friends that you're willing to settle for false friends. Don't we see our coworkers doing this all the time? They're so desperate to have acceptance and somebody to like them and somebody to welcome them. So they're willing to do anything with anybody or date anybody. Why? Because I've got a friend. Don't be willing to settle for a false friend. Constantly be asking yourself as a friend, what's good for my friend? And getting him up in the morning is not good. Unless it's 11:30 and they need to get up. Look at an example here in verse 15 of the dangers of an annoying friendship. He makes an application right on the heels of this that is surprising, and I've never seen these two together in context, but I think it flows right out of verse 14, and I think you'll see that. Verse 15, "A constant dripping on a day of steady rain and a contentious woman are alike. He who would restrain her restrains the wind and grasps oil with his right hand." A contentious, nagging wife is compared to the annoying drip drop of a leaky roof on a rainy day. It can about drive you crazy, can it? Or I heard downstairs this morning in one of your Sunday school rooms, kids, there was the chirp of that fire alarm that the battery must be low on. You ever been laying in bed at night and then the fire alarm starts beeping about every minute, or a carbon monoxide detector, and it just drives you crazy? That's what he's saying. Somebody who should be your best friend, your wife, but is annoying and contentious, he says, it's like a leaky roof on a rainy day. So a friend, secondly, is not only faithful, You, secondly, need to be a sincere friend, not a false friend. Turn back to chapter 17. Chapter 17. We find the third attribute of a good friend. And as you think about what you have to be as a friend, to be godly, you need to be faithful. Secondly, you need to be sincere and genuine. And thirdly, Proverbs 17, verse 17 says you need to be loving. 17:17, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. You see, he's not diminishing the importance of biological family. My parents are immensely special to me and always will be. He says a brother is born for adversity. A brother who's a good friend will be there when you need them in crisis times. And not only a biological member of your family, but also a member of your church family, he says, will love at all times if they're the right kind of friend. Love is devotion to one another. So when life is rough, when they're depressed, when they're mad at you, when they've blown you off, when they're ignoring your emails for a few days, when their mom has died, whatever the situation, whatever the crisis, it says a good friend, a wise friend, loves at all times. And rather than so much focusing this morning on saying, yeah, I wish God would give me that kind of friend, you focus on being that kind of friend, and I would almost guarantee you there will be people that will want that. A friend loves at all times. You say, when life gets really hard, I just don't know what to say. What do you say to somebody after their parents have died? A lot of times, I don't know what to say. After Daniel Popola died, I didn't know what to say. Say you love them. Say you're praying for them. Oftentimes, that's enough. Sometimes, just being there is enough. Job's friends were a help to Job when they were there and kept their mouth shut. But when they opened their mouth, then it went downhill fast. Sometimes just being there is enough. As a senior in high school, one of my buddies was Brandon Zell. We called him Bruno. I don't remember where that came from, but we called him Bruno. And he was a big dude. Even in high school, he was a big dude. He joined the Marines, and man, he had physique. Got news one afternoon. I came home and found out. I don't remember if my parents had found out or Ian had called me, but Brandon's dad was worked at the university farm, and we don't quite know. I don't know what to this day what happened, if he hit an electrical wire or something, but he was killed that day. Just bam, 37 years old. Bruno's a senior in high school. We're a senior in high school. We got a basket. That night we had art a series, some opera concert or symphony or something. I remember sitting there and just my mind was 1,000 miles away. So after art a series, or the next night, I remember some of us went out to be with Brandon and his family. I'm probably 17 years old. I don't have any training in grief counseling. I don't have a clue what to say to Brandon when I show up. I remember it vividly. The house was dark. I mean, there weren't many lights on, and it was a very appropriate picture of the dark time in their life. I remember being in that dark house, and I can almost remember saying nothing that night. I didn't know what to say. But we were there. We were with him. And I think that made the difference. The Lord uses friends to get you through dark times. I have another friend, Randy Carrier, from my home church in Greenville. His dad was our music pastor growing up, and his dad has been battling cancer here for the past couple years and has just declined and passed away last Sunday, and they had his funeral yesterday. And so I sent Randy a text last night. What do you say? I think my text was 2 sentences long. Something about love and prayers. And you know what? Almost instantaneously, I got a text back from Randy that communicated. You may not have known what to say or exactly. You weren't very eloquent. He didn't say that. But it made a difference. It's appreciated. One of the most wonderful blessings of Lisa's surgery was just getting the reminder from God that we have many friends like you who love us. Got an email from one of my friends and I almost just broke down crying right there. Not because he had used all the sappy language, but it was just like overwhelming that we have friends that love us. And we know that, but sometimes in crisis you see it really poignantly. Another wonderful blessing. I mean, even on Facebook or an email, just the simple statement, we love you and we're praying for you. That made a lot of difference for us. Probably the second biggest help were the meals from you guys because a friend is there at all times and you were there for us. Being there when life is good too. I mean, this is the hard part sometimes is weeping with those who weep. But at all times means the good times too. What happens sometimes when our friends get a promotion, get a pay raise, get engaged, have a baby, get a cool video game that we were wanting to get that we didn't get for our birthday? What happens sometimes when a good thing happens to a friend? We get jealous, don't we? And he says, you rejoice even in the good times. Rejoice in the big things and the small things. Don't envy God's blessing on their life. Thank God with them. When one of your friends, kids get saved. What a wonderful thing to rejoice with them about. He says, a brother is born for trouble, distress. Friends, love for friends is doing good for your friend with the right attitude at the right time. That's what love is. The right thing, the right attitude, the right time. That's biblical love. One final passage just across the page, chapter 18. Chapter 18, verse 24. There's a translation question here. King James translates it, he who would have friends must show himself friendly. And while that's true, I'm not sure that that's the best way to translate this passage. Here in verse 24, I think it's better translated this way as the New American Standard translates it. A man of many friends comes to ruin. You say, that doesn't make sense. You would think the more friends you had, the better off you were. A man of many friends literally will be broken, will be shattered. Maybe because if you have so many, it shows you're easily influenced. You'll do whatever it takes to be popular. Or maybe you look at, I've got 2,745 friends on Facebook. I'm liked. I'm loved. And you get proud. Or probably what he's driving at here, that a person who has lots of friends often has very shallow friends. They're very shallow friendships. So they don't stick close and they're not there when you need them and you're left frustrated in your time of calamity because those that you thought were friends really weren't your friends after all. I want to encourage each one of us, do not try and find peace and joy in human friendships. It's not there. Solomon explicitly says a person of many friends is broken, shattered. Don't look for satisfaction in human friendships. But look at this. He says in 18 verse 24, there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. I think he's talking about human friends. There's a human friend that will stick closer, literally cling to you more than a brother. Sometimes your brother or sister are too far away to help. And this friend that you have close by that God has placed in your life will be there when you need them to cling to us in love, sometimes with even more affection than your biological siblings have for you. I want to make an application here about marriage. Because in the Song of Solomon, that wonderful book on sexual love and marriage, it's not a metaphor for Christ and His church. Okay, it's a book about sexual love and marriage. In Song of Solomon 5, verse 16, what does the bride say about her husband? She says, this is my beloved one and this is my friend. I want to ask you, husbands and wives, could you say today, this is my beloved one and this is my friend? I know you could say that on your wedding day. I'm not asking you about your wedding day. A trained monkey can do that on his wedding day. Could you say today, this is my beloved and this is my friend? Or have there been little foxes that are spoiling the vines that you need to deal with? This is my beloved. I mean, Lisa's my best friend. Lisa's my best friend, and that's the way God intended it in a marriage relationship. Don't spend life trying to become popular with lots of people or accumulate friend after friend. A few close friends or even one close human friend is at times enough. God determines that. He brings friends out of your life and He takes them out of your life. Be a friend to everyone who needs one, but don't demand that God give you every one of them as your friend. And I think there's application in this verse to the best friend of all. The friend who sticks closer to your brother when your best friend disappoints you, as inevitably happens. Abraham was called what? The friend of God. God wants friends. Can you imagine that? Matthew 11:19, Jesus is called what? The friend of sinners. John 11:11, Jesus went to the grave of his friend Lazarus, it says. And he wept there because he was his friend. And in John 15:15, to drive it home for every believer here this morning, what did Jesus say? He says, I don't just call you slaves, I have called you now friends. If you're a child of God, you've got this friend. If you don't know this friend, you don't know anybody. I love that East Indian song that John taught us. The best book to read is the Bible. The second verse, the best friend to have is Jesus. Because He's that friend that sticks closer than a brother. So your friends are shaping your character and your destiny. So two questions this morning. What kinds of friends do you have? Do you have wise friends? You need some new friends? Pray that God will bring them. Secondly, you are helping to shape the character and the destiny of your friends. So what kind of friend are you? Would you bow your heads, please? I think the response is pretty straightforward today. God has been speaking to you through His Word throughout the message. So you probably know how you need to respond and commitment. So I'll ask you here in the quietness of the moment. Do business with God. Dear Lord, You are the friend of all friends. Sometimes our best friends are taken away from us in death. Sometimes they move away. And sometimes they choose to walk away. But in all those situations, the friend that sticks closer than a brother is still there. So help us to find our joy and satisfaction in the smile of Jesus, the friend who never leaves or forsakes. We pray in Jesus' name.